Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:30 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time, or summertime, I should say. And today is July 5th. I'm recording a little later than normal because I've spent the morning supporting my daughter at the fencing national championships, and tomorrow's event will be in the early morning, so I don't anticipate having to record later than normal tomorrow. Now, we had the Fed minutes come out today, and it was clear from the decision that they made last month that it was unanimous, but not quite as unanimous under the hood as might have been anticipated. So that virtually ensures they're going to raise rates again in July, and that has put upward pressure on the 10-year yield. So as we think then about what is likely here, well, this is coming up now to test the sequence of lower rally highs. And the yield has certainly paused over the course of the last 8 months. So CPI is coming back down, and the CPI rate is about 4%. Now it's still double what the hoped for rate of 2% is, but certainly the trend is lower. But it does look likely that the Fed is going to raise rates again, and they may do so once more. But then it's not simply thinking about what the Fed is talking about, but also that initial jobless claims are still rising. And then yesterday we also had, or excuse me, it was on Monday, we had the ISM coming out, and the manufacturing ISM is in sharply negative territory. So manufacturing isn't in great shape. And one thing that I'm a little bit, I think, I just remember back when we had to fill out the paperwork when Mrs. Tracy was setting up her LLC. And one of the questions that it asks you is, in setting up this LLC, do you anticipate hiring any people? So you will obviously be enthusiastic as you set up a company and you say yes. And then they say, well, how many? And you might say one or two or three. And that's generally where the expectations for the number of employees that the economy is going to generate comes from, is from those kinds of surveys. But the reality is that she didn't hire anybody, and basically just did most of it herself, because you spend most of your time just outsourcing to some of the delivery companies like Amazon. So that means then that the survey that came with putting together that application for a business really was nonsense. And if you start multiplying that up at scale, well, then it means that the expectations for where the payrolls are could be well shy of the mark, and particularly in an environment where liquidity conditions are tightening up. But what I found interesting today is that despite the fact that bond yields are rising, the stock market remains really quite steady, and the Nasdaq was in very mild negative territory, but still off the open price of the day. Now it is certainly being supported by some of the very large companies like Meta, for example, and Meta is starting off its Twitter rival and calling it Threads. There are really only two ways you can grow a social media business. The first is to capture the next youngest demographic. And Roblox is trying to do that right now. And they've got these annoying games with a little metaverse inside, and they're trying to create communities inside it. And they even have their own version of a token that you can transact with inside the game. But the share price hasn't really gone anywhere but sideways since the decline in 2022, and it's still well below the IPO price. To ascertain then that this is going to be the next major social media venue, it seems to be a bit of a stretch. On the other hand, Meta really is accelerating higher here, and it is just one new high after another. And the share got all the way up to test the $300 level today and eased back a little, and it's very overbought in the short term. But the sequence of higher reaction lows is rivetingly consistent. So this is certainly helping the outlook for the wider Nasdaq when you continue to have this strong performance from some of the larger companies. And Google has also steadied in here, so it is now bouncing. And this is a higher reaction low from above the 200-day moving average. So we're still in a reasonably benign environment here for some of the largest companies. Now, I do think that we're due consolidation in Apple simply because it is hovering here around the 3 trillion market cap level and just coming down to test that area in here today. And I suspect that more than a few investors will be pausing to see what happens at this particular level. Now, when we think about what's going on in the gold market, we had a very small downside Q reversal today. But it's not certainly not dynamic, and the key to the key is the dynamic. But the reality is that with interest rates continuing to rise, then that's going to put upward pressure on the real yield. And we certainly have a positive real yield right now. It's at about 170 basis points. You have CPI at about 4%, and you have the Fed funds rate at 5.25%. And then if you start messing around with inflation expectations going to the future and the potential that inflation will come down and wages will stay high and interest rates will stay high, then you're going to have positive real rates. And trend of the positive real rate environment is very important for gold prices. So it's been going sideways for most of the last 8 months, but it is now starting to tick up again. And if this measure breaks higher, well, then that will be positive real interest rates that are likely to weigh on the gold price. Now, there are two big components that you require for a big bull market in gold. One is negative real interest rates. We do not have those right now. And then it's the other is a weaker dollar. And the dollar is not surging, but it's not falling precipitously either. Now the dollar index is hovering here right in the region of the 200-day moving average. But if we don't have a sharply lower dollar or a dollar that is trending lower in a dynamic manner, and we don't have negative real interest rates, why is it that gold hasn't fallen further? Why is it still holding here in the region of the 200-day moving average? Well, I think the reason for that is quite simple. I think most investors believe that the Federal Reserve might raise rates again in July, but that we are rapidly approaching the peak of the interest rate hiking cycle. And that when unemployment eventually rolls over, then there's going to be a lot more money printed to try and rescue the economy. And consumers are beginning to feel the pinch. With rising interest rates, anyone who wants to take out a new loan is paying a lot more now, whether that's for a car, a boat, a plane, or a house. The interest rate is a lot more now than it was a year and a half ago. And that hits spending power, as well as the fact that the cost of just about everything has gone up. So you have consumers that are being tightened. You have a central bank that is likely over-tightening and is more likely than not to make a mistake. And this is not unique to the USA either. And the Bank of England, there is speculation that they may have to raise rates as high as 9%, excuse me, 7%. And the FTSE 100 is pulling back here. It's now trading below the 200-day moving average. Now, we'd had a good-sized rebound from the FTSE 250 2 weeks ago, and that helped to confirm a low of near-term significance in the region of the low from back in March. But we have not yet had follow-through on the upside, and it was in negative territory in here today. And the Bank of England raising rates so aggressively into a weakening property market, as well as putting pressure on mortgage holders, then that is certainly something that is likely to cause an untoward result. So then there's also some pressure coming to bear on landlords in Germany, and I think it's worth remembering or reminding ourselves that German property was a non-event sector for decades, and the onerous landlord rules that Germany has to protect renters, and it is a nation of renters. Even though there is a Pfandbrief and fixed rate mortgages there, we had prices just explode higher over the last 15 years during quantitative easing, which was graphic evidence of asset price inflation in response to quantitative easing. But I still find it really quite amazing that people don't draw the corollary, which is that quantitative tightening causes deflationary forces. And we are approaching that kind of environment where inflation is likely to undershoot, and that there is nothing to say that inflation has to stop declining when it gets to 2%. Who's to say that it can't go to 1%, zero or below? And I do think that is the more likely scenario because we are still in an environment where the total assets of central banks are contracting. And this is, I think, one of the more important charts. It's also true that the bull market that's been underway since 2008 has been liquidity fueled. And I had dinner last night with a wealth manager, a rather senior individual at one of the big asset management firms, and we were chatting about what people are investing in. And what he was basically saying was that for people that are already wealthy, those that aren't really speculating in the market and are just there for a reasonable return, they're more than happy to just put their money into money market funds and earn close to 5% and not participate in anything other than private equity, where there is a reasonable expectation of an outsized return above the money market rate. And there's not a lot of patience for jumping in and following these accelerating trends in response to the euphoria around artificial intelligence. So that's further evidence that there is a huge volume of cash on the sidelines, and that will provide the fuel for a future bull market, and it's certainly helping to provide some of the fuel for the bull market that remains underway. We can also then think about the fact that several of the European stock markets are also pushing on the upside here. And I will come back to that central bank balance sheet chart if it decides to load. So when we look at the Dutch stock market, for example, it is coming up towards the upper side of its range. And I do apologize that the chart. The charts aren't loading all that quickly. So it's the AEX is right in the region of the upper side of its range. It's pausing a little in here and it's a bit overbought in the very short term, but the sequence of higher reaction lows is still very much intact. Now, we had a negative day yesterday for the Spanish market, and it looks potentially that it's going to fail to sustain this breakout to a new 3-year high. So we may get some consolidation in some of these European markets. But the broader picture here is that Europe doesn't have a big weighting of technology firms, so it's not nearly as overbought as some of these other markets. And I think that's something that's going to play into the investment themes of the next several years. Now you have India, which is more highly valued than several of the other big emerging markets, with higher valuations overall, but it does have one of the better growth rates. And the Nifty index is breaking out to new all-time highs. So this is the conclusion of an 18-month process of consolidation, and there's certainly the potential here for additional upside overall. Then China is still in this interesting phase where they're keen to talk up the market and keen to talk up the outlook for free trade internationally. But they're not really doing much to support the stock market, and the CSI 300 was in negative territory today, and the renminbi continues to devalue. And This, I think, really helps to highlight, the catch-22 that China is in. Because if they stimulate in order to rescue the property market, well, it will only cause a bigger problem later by further inflating the bubble. But if they don't, well, then they risk having a housing crash, and that's also going to have severe negative consequences. So they're really between a rock and a hard place. But the reality here is that they're devaluing the currency, and that is aimed squarely at enhancing the competitive edge of the manufacturing sector. Now, it's also, I think, it potentially at least in response to the Japanese devaluing their currency. So we're in an environment here where the renminbi will become progressively under pressure because the Japanese are devaluing their currency. So this is the number of renminbi in 1 yen. And despite the fact that the yen has been quite weak over the course of the last few months, it's been reasonably steady against the renminbi. And I think this might help to highlight exactly what is going on. The Japanese are trying to compete with China as a favorable export, or to create an export model. And that also is something that is going to play into geopolitics. Now, when we think about Australia, well, a lot of exports from Australia do go to China, and the index was in negative territory today. The ASX 200 has been ranging in a volatile manner for the last couple of years, but mostly it's been above the peak from 2019, or at least early 2020. And as long as that remains the case, I don't think anyone is going to be really worried about profit erosion. But these lengthier ranges following big moves on the upside, well, then they're not the most convincing of continuation patterns. So it's going to have to at least sustain the move up through the 7,500 level. Now, when we think about the oil price, we had quite the divergence today in the performance of Brent crude relative to West Texas Intermediate. Crude oil was in positive territory today. But then, if we just look at the West Texas Intermediate price, it was up over $2. That's a more dynamic move, but obviously the same pattern overall. Now, testing the sequence of lower rally highs. And this is the big argument is about whether OPEC is going to successfully match supply with demand, or whether demand will fall faster than expected, or faster than the ability of OPEC to keep up with. And that is going to, the answer to that question is going to result in a breakout, whether up or down. My money remains on the downside, but at least until we see the yield curve spread starting to turn around, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside for the stock market. So, the yield curve spread is something to pay particular attention to, not when it continues to decline, but rather when it starts trending higher. Now, we are still quite a way from it trending higher, but when they do start to eventually cut rates, then this is going to turn around in a hurry. And we are at a very inverted in environment. So, the continued performance of the stock market is one of the primary factors that has helped to support financial conditions overall. So, the Goldman Sachs Financial Index, or Financial Conditions Index, is now starting to roll over again. And it was really quite benign in. It was quite benign for the last 3 or 4 months. Having rallied, this index going up means that financial conditions are becoming more tighter. So very benign during the pandemic, quite tight during 2022, and now benign over the last 6 months. That is despite the fact that interest rates have gone up quite a lot this year. That really does help to highlight just how much of an influence the stock market has on liquidity, and that there is both a pull and a push factor to take into account with these. So we're certainly in an interesting environment overall, and I continue to see these incredibly bullish forecasts around demand for metals. But copper prices are rolling over. And I think that the closest corollary that we have is the experience that we've had with lithium, where there has been a massive mismatch between when demand arrives and or it grows, and then the response of supply. It resulted in an exceptionally choppy market environment where lithium has had epic advances followed by epic declines. And I think that we may be in for something very similar with copper, because if we look at what's happening in the UK, they set aside budget for meeting some of the carbon goals set out for 2030, but then the ministers didn't spend the money, and now it's being taken away from them. And then there are other spending priorities which are taking precedence, not least funding or helping the UK to fund its portion of the funding for the war in Ukraine, as well as the need for some assistance for mortgage holders as interest rates rise. And what this helps to highlight, I think, first is the first rule of politicians is that if you don't spend your budget, it's going to get taken away. And then the second rule is the kinds of promises that are made for the long term often fall foul of the necessity of the near term. And inflation and the mortgage interest rate crisis that an increasing number of mortgage holders are heading towards is going to trump the worry about climate change every day of the week. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to have more money invested in renewable energy. But I think it is going to very much, or I guess the bull market hypothesis is going to completely hinge on what Chinese demand is going to look like relative to demand from the renewable energy sector. But the most important thing is that the renewable energy companies aren't doing great. And even the uranium ETF was in negative territory in here today. And there is speculation that Russia is preparing to have an inverted commas accident at the Zaporizhia nuclear facility in Ukraine and getting ready to blame the Ukrainian military for it. And of course, within the fog of war, and particularly the media fog, it's very hard to gain a real insight into what is fact and what is fiction. But the possibility of an accident in a nuclear facility isn't good news for the uranium sector overall. As we think then about the agriculture sector, and corn prices are very much influenced by what happens in the oil market. But then the corn price, having popped on the upside, has come rattling back down over the last week. And this has extended the downtrend. And then wheat is one of the most vital of all food commodities and heavily influenced by what happens in both Russia and Ukraine. And the price had surged higher, came straight back down again, but is a bit steadier in here this week. So we've had quite a bit of volatility in some of the agricultural commodities. And that has fed through into a bit of rock and roll in the agriculture fund, but it is holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, and this continues to look like a recovery trajectory overall. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.